May it please the Court, Mr. Chief Justice. Justices, good morning. Paul Wallace on behalf of the state, the appellant in this matter. Almost slipped. This case, in the end, really is where the rubber meets the road in regard to police officer safety at the roadside. Because the bottom line question is whether or not the language of this and other courts addressing resolving Fourth Amendment claims and officer safety claims means something. Because that law recognized that roadside stops are especially fraught with danger, that danger is minimized when police officers are able to exercise certain control, and that police officers are allowed to take suitable measures to ensure their safety at the roadside. Now, there are a few givens in this case. Mr. Abel was validly stopped. He was validly questioned about his whereabouts, where he was going under 1902. The Superior Court found that, and there's been no argument about that.
Well, help me at the beginning of your argument to just tell us clearly the state's theory of the case on appeal and what your theory of the case was at trial. Because, you know, at one time we have something in the record about a search incident to a traffic arrest. Then you've talked about officer safety. And then we have something in the record about a search incident to a weapons arrest. We have suggestions that maybe there was a consent. So given all of those different permutations on the record, what was the state's theory at trial, and what's your state's theory on appeal?
I believe, Your Honor, if the court were to look at the state's theory at trial, and it's probably best consolidated at Appendix A9 in the state's response to the suppression motion, that this was not a second seizure, that in fact it was the continuation of one seizure, and that by the time an actual second seizure took place, which would have been the actual laying of hands and frisking him, taking the guns out from him, that was a search incident to arrest, because prior to that occurring, Mr. Abel had already said, "I do have guns." So that there was probable cause by that time, that was a search incident to arrest.
And the trial court said his statement that "I have guns" was involuntary, and therefore that couldn't be the basis for it. Wasn't that the trial court's ruling?
Yes. The trial court's ruling, and I think that even in the last oral argument that even Mr. Hurley had to agree, that merely asking, "Do you have weapons," doesn't extend this, isn't impermissible. I listened to the oral argument again because I believe that he did make that concession. He's even given up the ghost on what the Superior Court found, because the Superior Court said, by asking Abel if he had any weapons during a traffic stop without specific articulable facts to suggest he possessed weapons exceeded the initial scope of the stop. Our position has always been there is no second seizure in asking about those weapons and telling him his intent to pat him down. That is not a second seizure. And therefore, it was an activity to ensure the police officer's safety, to ensure the motorist's safety. It was all part of writing the ticket and ensuring he could do it safely, opposed to other circumstances this court has seen.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt before you finished your sentence, but is it of any significance that once the question is asked, the defendant then says, "No, I don't have any guns," and then the trooper says, "I'm going to pat you down anyway"? Is there any significance to that?
I know the court asked that question the last time, and I don't know that there is. We give significance then to his bold-faced lie to the police officer when he looks him in the eye and says, "No, I don't," when he's carrying two loaded automatic pistols.
Now it's a bold-faced lie, but I'm wondering what effect that has on reasonable suspicion. You ask the question, you get an answer, and it's a split second, and you say, "Well, I'm going to pat you down anyway." What does that do to the concept of reasonable suspicion? What does it heighten it? Does it lessen it? Does it eliminate it? Any effect at all?
I think when we look in the totality of the circumstances of this case, and it's this is a fact-driven case that's somewhat unusual because of the police officer and his specific knowledge and experience with the issues that we're dealing with in this case. The police officer up to that point had many reasons to believe that this person could be armed. His gang affiliation, the fact that he knew that he was in a place that was enemy territory, perhaps even the speeding itself with another gang member, and then when he says, you know, at first he says, well, we're just out on a run, and then when he asks some further questions, he becomes less forthcoming. The police officer views him as being evasive. That I think that the police officer is trying to use a tool that is least intrusive. First ask him. Maybe he'll just say, yeah, I got guns, and here they are. That's certainly trying to keep the temperature down, and he even says, I'm trying to kind of diffuse the circumstance, just move on, although I have, you know, all these things in my head as to this is a guy who could be armed and could be dangerous to me.
Let's change the facts slightly.
Yes.
Let's assume in this case, the officer did not ask the question, do you have any weapons, but simply proceeded to pat him down. Could he have done that?
I suggest that given the totality of the circumstances, that there was some reasonable ground, that the police officer...
Well, let me say it differently, and this is really stating in different terms, I think, the question that the Chief Justice asked, which is the significance of the fact that the question was asked and was answered falsely. If the trooper could have proceeded to pat down the defendant without even asking the question, then the question and answer have no legal significance.
Correct.
And is that your position, or is it some other position?
No, but that my position is that specific fact, that specific question and answer, and I probably was less definitive when I answered the Chief Justice about it, but I think I can be more definitive in the circumstance that Your Honor is asking, is of little significance, really no legal significance, because, first of all, the police officer standing there next to him had myriad choices he could have made in reality. In reality, he could have flat out done a custodial arrest under 701 from the time he walked up to it. We know that the police officers don't exercise that statute very often. Here he didn't. He could have done a two-hour detention when he said, I'm not going to tell you where I'm going, under 1902. The Superior Court even said, and this court has said, 1902 is applicable to Caldwell in the investigation of those types of things. He didn't. He's trying to figure out what to do here, and I suggest doing it in a suitable way.
My question about the state's theory. You started with officer safety, and in response to the Chief Justice and Justice Jacobs' questions, you seemed to suggest he could have just done a pat-down without ever asking the question. And if he'd done the pat-down, he would have had to justify that, probably based on officer safety. As I read the Superior Court's decision, she looked at what was known to him before he said, I'm going to pat you down. And the Superior Court judge said being in a gang and the other things known to the officer weren't enough. So just to keep my question simple, are you relying on officer safety? And is the state's position on appeal, he could have patted him down without asking? And if your theory is officer safety, what in the record supports him doing that?
The state's primary theory is that this was a suitable measure for officer safety given the totality of circumstances here. I point out the fact that there are other things he could have done to show. We ask that police officers, in exercising seizures, be reasonable. I mean, he seizes them as soon as he stops the car. We know that's a very de minimis seizure. We ask that they be reasonable. And what the state is suggesting is he is being reasonable and going about this in a way that he was ensuring, one, the least intrusion to Mr. Abel, to do what he needed to do, and to do it in safety. So I hope I've answered the court's question.
Now tell us, you know, when he said, I'm going to pat you down, what are the record facts that support his concern for his safety?
Well, I would suggest, and if we put that in terms of, you know, reasonably concluding that he might be armed and dangerous, as Johnson does, that the gang affiliation, the fact that he's speeding to begin with another gang member and that they split up, that the police officer said that.
Let me interrupt you here.
I'm sorry.
Because I think this is critical to your answer, or at least our understanding of your answer to Justice Holland's question. Suppose the facts were altered slightly so that this motorcyclist was not identified as a member of any gang, but was simply a civilian speeding on a motorcycle. Would the officer then have the same right or privilege to proceed immediately to pat down the cyclist?
To do an actual pat down? No. I don't think so.
So doesn't this whole case turn on, at least from your standpoint, the fact that this motorcyclist was a member of an outlaw motorcycle gang?
That is a fact that you cannot take out of the police officer's mind.
No,
and it justifies.
You can take it out. I'm asking whether it's pivotal to your analysis.
I think it is the fact that the analysis does turn on, yes.
But now I'm confused, because just a few minutes ago you said that an alternative justification would be the fact that the individual was speeding and the police officer under 701 had the right to make a custodial arrest. And if he did that, cuffed him, he would then frisk him before he put him in the car and took him to JP court to be arraigned, correct?
Yes.
So why would it make any difference if there was a grandmother on a scooter, as I mentioned before, or a member of Hell's Angels or the Pagans on a Harley, under those circumstances, if the police officer still had the right to make a custodial arrest?
Your Honor, I am trying to stick basically with the state's primary argument about of safety.
That's one of the inconvenient things about having an appellate court.
I understand.
We don't always let you stick to just the theory you want to present.
Look, the reality, Your Honor, and I don't want to, the reality is, could he have simply done a full custodial arrest under 701, in which case this would have been a search incident just to that arrest? Sure he could. There are,
but wait a second, I'm getting a little confused now. Are you saying that since the officer could have done other things that wouldn't have raised these questions, we don't look at whether the pat down was constitutional because he could have done it for reasons other than officer safety?
No, I don't feel comfortable saying that, Your Honor.
Okay, so let's stick with officer safety, which is the purported reason for patting him down. And then, if I understand correctly, the state was asked, okay, what facts support a concern for officer safety? And you're saying the fact that there was gang affiliation. Was there anything else presented to the court beyond that this motorcyclist was a member of an outlaw gang?
Yes.
What exactly were those facts?
I've tried to get through this list a couple of times, Your Honor. The gang affiliation, the police officer's specific knowledge, not only as to, not just that he is a member of Hell's Angels, but the interaction between Pagan territory here and the fact that people in those circumstances will carry weapons, the fact that he said, I am on a run, which could mean different things to different people, but to somebody who has the same knowledge and experience that he does, means I am on potential gang business here. And then when he's asked, well, where is your destination? He says, I'm not going into that with you. And his demeanor changes, which the police officer says, given what's going on, it appears to me he's trying to then hide something. The fact that he was with another gang member and that they split up and that he was, in fact, speeding. Now, speeding, not everybody who's speeding is
Wait a second. I'm having some trouble with some of this. The fact that he's with another gang member, that raises a concern about officer safety when the other gang member is not being stopped right then?
Yes, it raises a concern that in fact he is there for, or that he is engaged in gang activity by the fact that he's with another gang member, as opposed to, you know, a seven-year-old on a motorcycle or something like that. That it's more likely that he's engaged in activities with the Hells Angels than just out for a Sunday ride, and that they then split up, and that he then says, well, we're on a run, and where are you going? I'm not getting into that with you. So he becomes evasive. he makes a mention of the fact that he does have bulky clothing, and that, sure, motorcyclists wear different things, but there are plenty of places to hide weapons as he's looking at him, and he has no knowledge then what he does, whether he does or whether he does not. So all of these things are things that are going on in Trooper Lloyd's mind as he is standing there. And
Mr. Wallace, I think you're saying this, but I want to be clear that in my own mind that this is what you are saying. Is wearing gang colors alone, riding a motorcycle, wearing gang colors alone, a basis to perform a Terry search?
Absolutely not. We're not saying that. If he just saw him in gang colors, he's going the speed limit, and he just happens to see him on 95 going 54 miles an hour on 95, and just says, that's a Hell's Angel, I'm stopping him, and I'm going to frisk him. No, he couldn't do that.
All right, so there has to be something more, and then the question is, how much more is enough?
Correct. But Your Honor, that is if we need to say there has to be a reasonable ground for pat down. And I think what we need to remember in this case is he didn't pat him down. He never got to that point. He stated his intent to pat him down, and Mr. Abel turned to him and said, okay, I got guns on me. So he did not do anything more. In fact, he never laid a hand on him. He didn't move towards him. He actually moved back away from him. So he stated that intent.
But isn't the whole issue about the fact that he announced, I'm going to pat you down. And in order for him to have carried out that announcement, he would have to have a basis in terms of concern for officer safety.
I suggest, Your Honor, simply to say those words, he doesn't need a basis for officer safety. But perhaps to take the next move and actually do it, he does. There was an intervening fact, and that is Mr. Abel said, I've got guns on me.
But where did the trial court err in saying that that sequence meant that saying I had guns on me was involuntary?
Well, I think that the Superior Court first erred when it said that merely asking him about guns is a separate seizure, and that the Mr. Abel's statement, I have guns, came from what was a separate seizure and separate and illegal seizure.
All right, well, let's put that aside. What we're really focusing on is the officer saying, I'm going to pat you down. Abel saying, I've got guns. And the Superior Court said his response was involuntary. And then Justice Berger's question is, if you say, I'm going to pat you down, and you give every intention that you are going to pat the person down, what did the Superior Court say is one question, and second, don't you need to have a basis for saying, I'm going to pat you down, which would be officer safety?
I suggest firstly that because the Superior Court started its error and really ended its error with the, he shouldn't have even been allowed to ask him that unless he had some belief that he had guns, that we don't get to the kind of the next, I can't point to the court where the next analytical step that the court went wrong was, because it starts there. Secondly, as to, and I apologize, I lost the second part of Your Honor's question.
Well, the second part was the Superior Court, if we put aside, you know, the starting point where you say the Superior Court went wrong, if we get to the middle, the Superior Court said, because the officer had said, I'm going to pat you down, his response was involuntary and therefore didn't provide a basis for a arrest, so to speak, for weapons, which you contend is what could happen next. My question is, the Superior Court's reasoning appears to be, you can't assert that you're going to pat someone down unless there's a record basis to support a concern for officer safety.
I think that where the court really erred in that regard if we begin with the proposition that the mere words of saying, "I'm going to pat you down," is some form of seizure, that the court gave far too little weight on those things that Trooper Lloyd pointed out that were of concern to him. Far too little weight. I see that I'm into my rebuttal time. If the court has any questions, yes, please.
Good morning, Chief Justice Steele, and good morning, Associate Justices. I will be a very subdued version of me, yes, this time, because the last time I wasn't very happy with my passion.
Can you speak up a little bit, Mr. Hurley?
I'm getting too subdued. I guess the Xanax has taken too much effect. I know I'm not supposed to start with a question, so I'm going to be political, and I'm going to say I don't have a question, but I'm asking for a clarification. We never got a response on my motion to allow the exhibits to be introduced, and I don't want to err and say something I'm not supposed to say.
Motion's denied.
Thank you. Well, no, thank you. Okay. I want to begin by copying.
Mr. Chief Justice, may we clarify that he may refer to the Murray case?
Yes, you asked a question about the exhibits. You didn't ask about the reference to Murray.
I assume Murray's okay.
Yes.
Okay. I see that. I'm going to borrow a page from the Vice President, which I probably shouldn't do, but I will. And I'm going to begin with I, talking about myself. I worked harder on this case than any case that I've ever worked on in this court. And there's a reason for it. And the reason is because I think this is the most important Fourth Amendment case that I've ever had, knowing what's going on in the street. I know my talents, meager as they are at times, and I know my disabilities or weaknesses. And I certainly don't bring to the table for you all the best, most eloquent oratory that you've ever heard. Big corporate attorneys are in here doing that. My brief writing skills are nominal at best, since I never went to law school in my senior year when they taught that, and that shows. But I'm out on the front lines, and I know things you don't know, you don't see. It never gets up here. And Mr. Wallace underscored it, coincidentally, when he said not many people get arrested on a 701 for speeding. And he's right. But I'll tell you who is getting arrested after Wren, and it's happening every day. It's people between the ages of 28 and 29, about females, Latinos, African Americans, and the typical charges are failing to use an indicator within 300 feet, or before making a turn, or before changing lanes. I don't have statistical information. I have my junk science sitting in my office and seeing the people come in and thinking, if you were in your 50s and white and driving a Mercedes, would somebody bother you on a lonely stretch of road with 300 feet? So this is a very important case because this underscores the second-class citizenship that is going on in this state. In this case, it's the Hells Angels, and I'm not particularly fond of motorcycle gangs, but I am fond of first-class citizenship for all, and you play an extremely important role because of what I'm going to tell you. And I don't have to make it up. We got it in a transcript from Trooper Lloyd. Have you made stops of members of outlaw motorcycle gangs? Yes, primarily mine is with the Pagans. This is an OMG in Delaware. Yes, the Pagan gang controls, the underground level controls Delaware. Do you immediately go and pat down every Pagan that you stop? And this answer just rings the bell. After communicating with them, I would pat them down. I do pat them down if I would pat them down before I went back to my police car. Mr. Wallace can flip and he can flop all he wants. He can't escape that. And he can't escape the remark of Trooper Lloyd talking about when he was asked, have you stopped a lot of motorcyclists? Quote, and this is at page 49 of the transcript, I have stopped numerous amounts of motorcycles. We have initiatives for motorcycles, hundreds. Mr. Wallace gets a chance to tell you what those initiatives are and whether or not they bestow a different class under Terry.
Well, Mr. Hurley, I assume Mr. Wallace's concession that being a member of a motorcycle gang is not a basis per se for a Terry search.
Right.
It's something that you would agree with.
Yes.
And presumably, however we rule, might be in an opinion. So doesn't that eliminate this concern that you're raising about other actions by this officer?
Absolutely not, because I know what's going on the highway. And if you let this one go by, they get more incentive to do what they're doing. Somebody has to say, this is the line in the sand. You are going to have to treat everybody the same. The Latinos and whoever it is that's riding around in the cars that you want to give. They got tinted windows. I can't tell you how many tinted windows, and if we had the statistics, they would be amazing. How many tinted windows? Those people just don't change lanes when you use their indicators 300 feet, not 285.
I take it you're asking us to take judicial notice of this at the appellate level, this empirical data that you're speaking about may exist in your world, but it does not exist in the record, correct?
I understand that, and I'm giving you an overview of the importance of this decision far beyond the contours of a David Abel.
Because in this record, how fast was your client traveling?
In the record, he was traveling over the posted speed limit.
Do we have a number?
84 is my best recollection of 55.
That's significant.
Oh, absolutely is. Absolutely is.
And is it still the fact that if you're more than 20 miles over, you're at risk of losing your driver's license?
No. 25.
So he was.
If you're 25 over, you get a 30-day. If you go to 30 over, you get a 60-day. And I guess it keeps going up. I've never had anybody more than that.
So he was more than 25 over.
He was. That's right, with motor vehicle. Nobody knows it until they have that.
85 and a 84 and a 55 is a lot different than tinted windows or a turn signal.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm not saying this is another one of these examples. I am saying that because of Wren, there is a potential for abuse that requires a bright line rather than just leaving it up to the nuances of caprice.
What's the bright line in your view?
The bright line is you have to follow Terry and you have to follow Caldwell. And if you don't have a reasonable suspicion for opening up a new investigation, hey, do you have any weapons? You don't go there. That's the bright line that I'm asking, not to just slide it around. And
wait a second. You're saying that after a valid stop, the officer was not permitted to even ask the question?
Absolutely. You can ask all the questions that are justified by the reason for the stop. Why are you speeding? How fast were you going? You can't go into other areas. Caldwell says that. You're initiating a second and independent investigation. You have to have a basis for doing so under Caldwell.
What about Arizona versus Johnson?
Arizona versus Johnson never ruled. Arizona versus Johnson said, you guys said it was consensual. It's not consensual. And in Arizona versus Johnson, interestingly, the Arizona court never ruled whether there was reasonable suspicion or not. And the Supreme Court said, oh, by the way, and I'm using my inelegant language, oh, by the way, if you guys want to consider reasonable suspicion to get there, go ahead and do it. And they should have. Because in Arizona versus Johnson, Johnson's sitting in the back of a car staring at the police as they come up, has a police scanner. She asks his name and address and identification. He has no identification. And he says, oh, I've been convicted of burglary. I just got out of the penitentiary last year. And the police officer said, a police scanner. Who has police scanners? People evading the police or people who are committing a crime. So under those facts, there ain't no doubt but that somebody had reasonable suspicion for their safety. This isn't even close,
well,
and that video proves it.
The reason I asked about that is because I thought I heard you say that you can only ask questions about the traffic stop itself or the alleged traffic violation. And in Arizona versus Johnson, an officer's inquiries into matters unrelated to the justification for the traffic stop, this court has made plain, do not convert the encounter into something other than a lawful seizure, so long as those inquiries do not measurably extend the duration of the stop.
Okay, measurably is the word. And measurably to me means noticeably, doesn't mean significantly or substantially. When you are going down the line of I'm stopping you for speeding, and you go over there, hey, how about let's talk about guns? You have measurably, not in terms of time, it's not 30 seconds versus 45 seconds, in terms of topics, in terms of the basis for why you're pulling the person over. Any more than you can go into, what's your ethnicity? Has nothing to do with nothing. You don't belong there. So I don't believe that if it's something that just flows in naturally, and the guy said, I'm going to a gun show. Oh, do you have any weapons? Fine, because there's a reason for doing it. But you can't just go up to anybody on the street and say, on a minor traffic matter, and say, by the way, do you have any guns on you? I don't believe that's allowed under Caldwell. That is a new investigation. Or do you have a dead body in the trunk by any stretch of passage?
Let's assume for the moment that it is permissible with a valid stop for an officer to ask, do you have any weapons on you? Does that eviscerate your position with respect to the validity of the subsequent I'm going to pat you down statement and then the discovery of the guns?
Once the person says no, unless there's some reason to go further, that's the answer you got.
Okay, so you got the answer no, but the police officer also can see that this person is a gang member or is wearing the colors of a motorcycle
yes,
gang.
Yes, which in every case it has decided it says that ain't enough. Excuse my music. That is not enough. That's right. He's Hell's Angels. All of Lloyd knew one of one. Lloyd didn't even know any. He didn't know anything about Hell's Angels at all. So the moment he says no, can't go any further. If he said no and there was some furtive gesture that made him think, well, no isn't no, then he has a reasonable suspicion to proceed further. But just, and you saw the video. That's the wonderful thing about this case. You don't have to get, he was extra nervous and all the nuances that get thrown in these cases day in, day out. And by the way, the state police is now limiting their MVRs in cases from DUIs. They don't need them anymore because of the contradiction that would be shown. So just another aside. All right.
Mr. Wallace was saying that the officer knew that Hell's Angels and the Pagans were at odds with one another, and that if this Hell's Angel was in Pagan territory, he might be armed, and if he wouldn't say where he was going, that was a reason for concern, and the word run somehow triggered a connotation of gang activity.
Okay.
Was all of this on the record as a reason for officer safety concern?
It's on the record. Logic. A Hell's Angel, loaded to bear, going to do violence, knows that on a run means, trouble. Cop says, what are you doing? Oh, I'm on a run. Like a hitman, what are you doing? Oh, I'm going to go do a hit today. A drug dealer, oh, I got drugs in the car. Doesn't add up. Illogical. Can't have it both ways. If run has a specific meaning, what person is going to say, I'm doing illegal stuff, officer. Just let me go. Don't give me a ticket. I'm going on my way to do criminal activity. Absolutely absurd, indefensible. With regard to the argument about the 701, the state waived it, Rule 8 clearly indicates that, the case law clearly indicates that, that's not an issue in the case. That leaves us with the reasonable suspicion based upon the various factors, and I've gone through them seriatim with excerpts so that I may offer some assistance. And by the way, under the cases that were cited in my motion in opposition to the re-argument, it indicates that although there's the technical right under the statute for the search incident arrest to apply, there has to be an arrest, not just a theoretical arrest. That's what the law seems to say. The cases were cited in my memorandum of law to the court. I have seen today five of them, and this is not political, this is true, this part. I have seen five of the most intelligent people that I know all say, I'm having trouble understanding. Does that mean all of a sudden you've lost it, all of you? Or does it mean there's one common denominator? Yeah, two words, flip, flop. At the trial level, the state's theory was one thing. Prosecutor goes to appeals division, what do we do now? Ooh, hey, you missed 701, throw that in now. Too late, sorry. We had no questions on the 701 issue. I didn't challenge the speed. I didn't challenge anything because it wasn't an issue. And now they come back up in here in this court and they say, well, if you won't give us 701, would you give us 1902? And if you won't give us 1902, would you give us Terry? And if you won't give us Terry, would you give us Terry with Arizona v. Johnson?
Is those arguments were waived.
Pardon me?
Your position is those arguments were waived.
Absolutely under Rule 8. And there's no plain error in the analysis that this court, and it says it's a narrowly tailored exception for irresistible, irrefutable prejudice or whatever.
Well, just to follow your train of thought, I think you're where you are in your argument is that we're down to reasonable suspicion.
Right.
And basically two facts on the record that are asserted to justify reasonable suspicion. One is the fact that this guy was wearing a gang outfit. And secondly, that he did not, he essentially refused to answer the question where he was going.
Yes.
Do I have that right?
You do, and I'm going to address.
So, I mean, is the line in the sand whether or not those two questions, those two circumstances are enough to constitute reasonable suspicion?
No, there's more than that because he pointed to other things at different times. Page 43, for the first time, he brings up clothes. I mean, I'm going to go through.
At some point, Mr. Hurley, we need to get down to what the issue is that we need to decide.
Yes, reasonable suspicion is the issue because the state has waived the 701 argument, and we're at a 1902 reasonable suspicion for protective frisk. Those are the two theories that are left standing.
And what circumstances do even you agree can be properly considered in inquiring as to whether there's reasonable suspicion?
Any circumstance in the totality of circumstances.
I'm
that's
talking
what,
about on this case.
That's what I'm preparing to do. It'll be more helpful to you if I can proceed, if you don't mind. All right, what we have on that video is a normal speeding stop. That's the police officer's testimony. He ran the tag, nothing alarming. Actual registration's okay, not stolen. The video shows the demeanor, it speaks for itself. The appellant complied with the signal. He promptly responded. His hands were on the bar so they could be in plain view. They came down, got him back up, kept looking straight ahead. The kickstand was not down, meaning he's not putting himself in a position to alight off of the bike if he chose to do so. He's straddling it, holding it up with his legs as opposed to putting it down so he can free himself up for attack. There was no gestures or bodily motions that was even commented upon nor are visible in the video that would suggest any form of threatening behavior. His demeanor is laughing and joking and his hands going up in the air. The first thing the state says is, well, the parking. And what Trooper Lloyd said was that because he and his partner split up, they did not stay together. That was one of the factors. And then a question was asked of him to underscore the absurdity of that position. Does it make it more likely to you I'm going to be hurt because these guys separate? Answer, no. It was definitely a portion of my mentality. What does that mean? State's burden, objective, police officer. No, it didn't make it more likely, but it's part of my mentality. It don't count. The next was the clothes. He was asked a question about the clothing, and Judge Jordan even got involved in the question because it just wasn't clear what's the big deal with clothing, because he indicates all kinds of motorcyclists, not just Hell's Angels or gang members, wear clothing. And he ultimately says that...
Did his jacket have on it the 1%?
No, that's Lloyd's pulling out of his... That's Lloyd indicating it without indicating authority for it, indicating he doesn't know much about Hell's Angels at all.
Well, my question is, did his jacket, the Hell's Angels clothing, have 1% on it?
Lloyd's actual remarks about the clothing in response to Judge Jordan's confusion, as you all have exhibited, there was nothing. If you're asking me anything abnormal about bulky, I didn't pick up on that, I will tell you. Well, the prosecutor did in making an argument. That's where that came from, not the police officer. He said it. It's uncontradicted right there. Other than the clothing, the next thing is the run. And I've already indicated what the importance of that is. It's just counterintuitive to think that somebody's going to admit they're going to engage in criminal activity. The war... We are running late today. We're going to get out of Delaware. He's on an interstate highway which has thousands of cars go back and forth. He's not in a neighborhood that's associated with the Hells Angels, excuse me, the Pagans, as Mr. Johnson was in the Crips neighborhood in Arizona. He's simply a passerby, no indication of anything about a war. And what Mr. Lloyd says is, my experience with Hells Angels is very limited. Delaware doesn't have one. I think we have one person in this state. How in the world can he reach a reasonable, subjectively fine, under Stafford doesn't count, how can he reach a reasonable assessment? I bet he's here for a war. Under, I don't know anything about Hells Angels, never met one in my life, but I hear things, and this is what war means. I'm on a run, I'm riding a motorcycle, and I'm going to go 85 miles an hour on a Sunday morning to get there fast. I'm just getting out of here on a run today. With regard to the refusal to answer questions. You asked me about Justice Jacobs. Jones versus State indicates that a suspect's actions in walking away from a police officer and refusing to obey to his commands to stop, now that's in an encounter, that doesn't give rise to reasonable suspicion. In Royer, again, it's a consensual situation, simply saying, I don't want to deal with you, doesn't count. Doesn't count, doesn't add to reasonable suspicion. Some people don't like the police. Some people who are Hell's Angels have probably been hassled before and have attitude.
All right, so aren't we down, accepting that, aren't we down to two facts, two circumstances? Number one, that this motorcyclist is wearing, what is it, a Hell's Angels outfit. And secondly, the officer's knowledge that Hell's Angels and Pagans occasionally get into violent rumbles that involve weapons.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly
what. Why isn't that enough?
And we don't even know what occasionally means. We have no way of knowing. That was not articulated.
Well, that was my word.
Your word's as good as anybody's word. We could say frequently, daily, yearly, annually. They have a certain day they meet and fight. Nobody knows because there's no record of it. State's burden, objective facts, it's not there. You're left here to speculate occasionally. That proves the point.
So, yeah, the point about the reference to what he said about the Pagans appears to be, even without a record basis for articulating a concern for safety, the officer admitted that he virtually automatically would frisk Pagans, and in this case you're arguing that he was automatically frisking a Hell's Angel.
As part of the motorcycle initiative, that is exactly. I can only conclude that because I consider myself fairly reasonable, and that's a reasonable inference to be drawn. Because given everything else that's here, it's not equating, but as soon as you go, Hell's Angels, different game plan, different initiative, had it been just some old guy on a motorcycle, this wouldn't have happened the way it happened, and that's where we have the Fourth Amendment being violated.
Did he admit that? That he was automatically, without thinking of anything else, searching him because he was Hell's Angel?
Of course not. He's not stupid.
Okay.
No.
But he did admit that's his practice with regard to Pagans.
He did admit that with regard. If that, I don't know that he's putting it together. The way his answer came out, it wasn't in a direct response. It's, you've done this a lot. And he sort of just spontaneously throws this in. Who knows? If I'd have gone back and said, so you're telling us that every time you see a Pagan, you say, oh, no, I look at all the circumstances, I would assume.
Is this motorcycle initiative something that's in the record?
Just in that terminology, the motorcycle initiative. Just as I read it to you, that's the only reference to it. Nobody followed up on what it meant. I was pleased because it wore out what I know, or what I think I know. That's probably a better term, what I think I know.
Can we try to refine the situation by changing the facts a little bit? We've got a person stopped wearing the Hell's Angel clothing, and let's assume for the moment that the police officer who stopped him testifies that he was aware that on this particular weekend or on this particular evening or morning or whatever, he had received word that there was inter-gang activity going on in Delaware, in northern Delaware. Would that have been enough so that the officer could then have a basis for concern for his safety?
You are right to the 50-yard line on that one. I'm going to say no. Under Dollard v. State, which is cited, simply knowing somebody's a drug dealer doesn't in and of itself, well, that's, it gets very, very close at that point in time, particularly if you know that morning I'm going to say this. If somebody, a police officer knew they'd gotten that there's a briefing, hey, we're hearing there's going to be a rumble, my word back in the 70s, a rumble between the Hell's Angels and Pagans today, and here's an out-of-state Hell's Angel motorcyclist, two of them, yeah, bingo, you've got something to go on. But that's not what happened here. With regard to his failing to answer where he's going, you can see, I'm not going there, I'm not. It's not that I am going to lie to you to create suspicion. It's just, I don't want to talk about that. I just want to get out of here. Hey, let me go, I'm out of here. So I don't think that's a justification to going to weapons. If he had continued in the vein, well, wait a minute, I want to know, where are you going? And you're going to tell me that, or we're going to stand here. And he then continues to refuse. That's one thing. He can pursue those questions. But to switch to a totally unrelated topic and say, well, because he said, I don't want to go there. And again, you'll see the demeanor. I don't want to go there. Come on, I'm just on a run. We're late. We're running late. Come on. that doesn't then make it reasonable to start, I better start asking about weapons at this point in time. And I wonder if there's any other questions that I can try and help you with. And I do want to apologize to the four of you, yes, who were here last. You weren't here, Justice Steele. I was rather animated and rather disappointed with my demeanor. And I try not to be that way most of the time.
Thank you, Mr. Early.
I'm not finished yet, Justice.
Oh, I thought you said if there were no other questions. I'm sorry.
No, no, I was just giving you my apology. And basically, I'll tell you what I'm doing. I'm filibustering. Whatever that word is that makes, I mean, I'm stalling because I told your clerks here that when you told me I was going to stop, I was going to say, no, I want to make my point, having watched the presidential debates. So that was what I was going to wait until my time has run out. Thank you.
I'm not going to go into things that aren't in the record. Had enough of that today. What is in the record is that this police officer explained exactly what was going on in his mind at the time. And he said it clearly at A445. We're talking about 45 to 50 seconds that I have to decide on my life. Everybody here has talked about whether or not he had reason to be concerned for his safety. Nobody knows that better than him standing there. We can sit here and try to be Monday morning quarterbacks and roll back the tape and replay it and roll back it and say, he's got no reason to be fearful here for his safety. But we're not there.
One of the problems of having objective review of somebody else's subjective state of mind, but that's the system we have.
It is the system we have, Your Honor. But that same system is the one under which we were working when this court said, in Robertson, once a forced encounter is justified, an officer's right to take suitable measures for his own safety follows automatically. And the question is, did this police officer take suitable measures to ensure his safety? And the state suggests, we went all around, what is the state arguing? And I have always said it's about officer safety in this and weighing that against the Fourth Amendment conscriptions that we have, and not going into 701 and 1902, but only to point out, guess what, there were other measures. Those weren't suitable.
Remind me of the chronology in this case. Mr. Hurley was saying that, you know, the police officer ran the tag and there wasn't a problem. Did the stop, the traffic stop occur, the police officer went to his car and ran the tag, and then came back and had this conversation with the guns, or what was the chronology?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. This isn't those types of situations where he's already done that and then comes back and says, hey, how about guns? What happened is he pulls him over. He runs the tag. He mentions the tag over the radio. You can hear it because it's on the tape. And we've submitted the tape to the court, the disc, old-time tape. He gets out. He walks up. He takes his license. He asks him questions about, well, why are you going so fast? You know, where are you headed to? And as he explains at A27, the next thing he is going to do is go back to his car to do what he needs to do to write a ticket. And that's when he says, any weapons on you? No. No guns? No, I'm good. All right, I'm going to pat you down to make sure you don't have a gun on you. And he actually moves away from him. He doesn't even move towards him, doesn't put a hand on him or anything else. And Mr. Abel just gets surprised and says, what do you mean? And the police officer says, I'm going to pat you down. And Mr. Abel says, I've got a gun. That's the chronology. So he hasn't even gone back to do, this isn't a Murray situation where all of the investigation is done. This is a police officer ensuring his safety before he turns his back on this man and goes back to his car. Because his knowledge, his experience, everything he knew at that point said, I should take that suitable measure. And the suitable measure he took was words, and words alone, not actions, not all of the other options he had to him. I'd suggest this is exactly what a police officer should do. You look at his, what he is doing in that situation, he's very professional.
And what did the Superior Court say in response to the state's officer safety argument?
Basically, turned it on, there isn't enough here, kind of what we've been talking about today, for an officer to be concerned about his safety. That's not enough to have some reasonable conclusion that this person might be armed if you need to get to that level. But that it's just not enough to say that there was a concern for officer safety here.
You said gang, being a gang member is not enough, and then you added to that he wouldn't give out his destination. And what else is on your list?
Well, Your Honor, I what I said was gang membership is not enough to simply pull somebody off the street, stop them, and frisk them. In this case, and I see my time is up, if I can just finish this question, I would suggest the totality of what the police officer saw. Two gang members together, they split up, they are speeding somewhere. He knows the history between that gang being in this territory and what might, that means that a person might be more likely to be, have a weapon. He sees that he has bulky clothing that he could, in fact, hide things in. He knows that he's first said, I'm on a run, but then says, I'm not going to go into where I'm going. I suggest that probably about hits it. You have to put it, what else is A7 through A9, where we explained what he knows about gang participation.
I have one question at the risk of prolonging your stay here. What do we make of the trooper's reference to the motorcycle initiative under circumstances where we have the unusual situation of a tape of an incident where officer safety is the focus and we're, with hindsight, trying to judge whether the police officer was reasonable in the actions he took? And to some degree, we have, are at risk for being sucked into a credibility analysis. Just what does the motor, what do we infer fairly from the reference to the motorcycle initiative?
I don't think, Your Honor, the court can infer anything from it because we're not sure what that meant. You read it, it's a very jumbled answer, and it's not sure whether that means a motorcycle safety initiative, a motorcycle gang initiative, that we stop all motorcycle gang members. I'm not sure what it is. Quite honestly, I've been a prosecutor for 23 years, never heard of it before.
Really, your answer is it has no real relevance to the officer safety analysis?
No.
All right. Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement and recess.